Next speaker in the program. Now we are going to move into the more technical part. The next speaker will be, as already almost announced by Horst Faster, will be Franz Och by Google. Franz Och will tell us about research and development, the systems and machine translation at Google.
Okay. Probably I start without the slides. I guess before we saw a talk without slides, it's possible. So my name is Franz Och. I work at Google. And what I plan to discuss is basically what we are doing at Google in machine translation, what we are working on, but also just looking at some of the great progress that machine translation in the field has done in general in the recent years. And the big progress that has been made, and we hope that we can continue make in the next few years. So now you would see a slide which discusses what Google is doing and why it is doing it. Okay, I guess I just continue. So Google's mission is to organize all the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful. So therefore, I know, Google is doing search, therefore Google is doing is scanning books. To make them available, and with respect to, here we have it, and a lot of other things. And now with the web and all those possibilities that we have with communicating online, a lot of the barriers are getting removed. And a big barrier that still is obviously, or has been there and is still there, is a language barrier. So there are, if you only speak Arabic, you only have access to 1% of the web out there. Because most of the web is not written in Arabic. So if you search, you just can get access to 1% and miss out on the other 99%. And so as part of Google's missions is to make it possible for everyone on this planet to access all the information always, everywhere. And so machine translation is just very key to this. So what I want to look at basically is a bunch of trends in machine translation in the last years. So the first one obviously is a better quality. We have seen a tremendous progress in quality in machine translation. So here is an example text in Italian, translated from Italian into English. And here are two translations. One of those is the human translation, and the other one is a machine translation. And so the task is, what's a machine translation, right? Machine translation is very bad, and it's hard to understand what it is, and makes a lot of mistakes, and a lot of ungrammatical things in there, and words are mistranslated and are confusing, and so it should be quite easy to solve that problem, right? Which one? Do people have guesses? Well, as you see, it's quite hard. And so Italian-English is one of those language pairs where machine translation really is now pretty good. So if you translate Italian to English or Spanish to English or Portuguese to English, then you can get machine translations which are semi-perfect. So this one, the machine translation here is not perfect. The human translation is also perfect. It's also not perfect. So that makes it especially challenging. The right one is machine translation, the left one is human translation. So some other languages like Hindi here, the same text translated from Hindi to English, there then you notice there are real, the typical mistakes that machine translation is doing. It's sometimes ungrammatical, some words are missing, so lunar probe, prickermark is just transliterated. And so for other languages for which they are not as similar to English, where we don't have as much data, then translation quality, I know, still there is a lot of work to do. But overall, when I worked 6 or 7 years ago in a DARPA project on the surprise language for Hindi, the translations that came out there 6 or 7 years ago were just basically word salad. You could kind of probably guess what the very rough topic was about. And now, I know, here you can still get a lot of information out of those types of translations. So why did we see all that progress in quality in the recent years? So I think the biggest reason is now that we have the statistical approach that we learn machine translation from data. That makes it possible that we add more data into the system, and the machine translation quality becomes much better. The other is we are working on more and more sophisticated machine translation models. Because the web is available, more and more training data is available, and can learn then bigger and bigger models. And so the models become much larger, and because of the progress in distributed computing, we can now build machine translation systems which span hundreds of gigabytes of RAM at one point in time in order to translate sentences, which then allows us to produce very good quality. And in general, there are many more research groups. A lot of interesting things people are trying out everywhere. There is a lot of new interest there. So let me go quickly through some of those points. So with a statistical approach, I guess I don't have to tell you what this is about, but the key why the statistical approach is so successful is that in machine translation, we have to make decisions under uncertainty. And whenever you have to do that, there is a theory behind statistical decision theory that allows you to make optimal decisions. That's what we want to do, right? We want to produce the very best translation that we can, and because it's one of those decision problems under uncertainty, we have to use the science behind that. And so that basically provides a general framework then for handling ambiguities, combining unreliable knowledge sources, integrating prior knowledge, and then also to learn from data, to learn from examples. And then we have a measure of success, namely the performance on unseen test data, with which we can then drive progress. So that's to the statistical approach. And then more data, right? More data is better data. That's here you see a curve which shows for different language pairs, Portuguese, English, French, English, Spanish, English, that blue scores, so the translation quality, on 1 million words or on 10 million words. So if you go from 1 million word to 10 million word, you get some languages, you jump over this 20% line, which is kind of the line when it starts on that type of test data, when the system starts to become reasonable. So that's one of our quality thresholds there. If it goes beyond the 20% line, then it becomes reasonable. A lot of languages just start out below that if you just have 1 million words, and then if you have 10 million, it becomes much better. And then if you go from 10 million to 100 million, you see same nice improvement now. All the languages are above the 20% line. Some even go beyond the 30% line. And then if you go from 100 million to 1 billion, you see for all languages then similar progress. And you can continue that. More data is always better. And because there is so much data now available, it really makes the quality of machine translation much better. So the other thing is improvement over time. We obviously work not only in collecting more data, but work on better algorithms to use to get more out of the same amount of data. And so here are some improvements over time for our system for a bunch of languages for which the baseline is very low, where we didn't have a system in the beginning for Hindi English, Thai English, and Hungarian English. And then working in those, so those improvements also include data improvements. Then you see a very nice improvement from quarter to quarter in the machine translation systems. And then the 20% line, again, defines roughly the line when the system becomes reasonable, that we are willing to put it out. The same, those learning curves you can draw for different types of the system. So this shows learning curves for the language model. Whenever we double the language model, we get a constant improvement in the quality of our machine translation system. So what that slide is also showing is that, I can't go into the details, but sometimes simple models are, as soon as you have very large amounts of data, simple models are often better. They allow to have a simpler system architecture, and with a certain size of the training data, then the differences from simple to complicated models just goes away. So the other is with respect to the very large models. I think that's another very important aspect which is not so frequently discussed, is that the more data we have, the bigger the models that we have to use when we really perform translations are. And the size of our models goes into the hundreds of gigabytes. So we cannot just store those or it would be very, very expensive to store those on one machine to store 100 gigabyte and then you want to perform multiple translation at the same time, so you need a lot of machines of that size. So the key there is to use distributed computer architecture, that you store your models in a distributed fashion over many hundreds or thousands of machines, and then perform translation in that setup. And that turns out to be very, very important to really handle those very large models. And then the last one, which I said before, another graph which moves to the up and to the right, is just the amount of interest in machine translation. There's so many people now, so many research groups working on machine translation and statistical machine translation. So that's scientific papers which use statistical machine translation in there as defined by Google Scholar. And so here you see a very nice trend where more and more research groups are working in that field, and that makes it very exciting, and new ideas are tried out, and a lot of it is also driven with those standard evaluations, the NIST machine translation evaluation, the WMT evaluations, or those which define then tasks where then people can write papers and improve some component, have them comparable evaluation results, and can show how well they do on one of those tasks. So that's with respect to quality. So the other trend is more languages. So we can now really build machine translation systems for many, many more languages than we could before. So that gives here a timeline for Google Translate. So Google Translate, in the beginning, we used a third-party machine translation system, a rule-based machine translation system, for a bunch of language pairs, I think it's 7 or 8 language pairs, to and from English. And then in 2006, we started with a few language pairs where we used our own statistical data-driven engine for Chinese, Arabic, and Russian. And then in October 2007, we switched completely to a statistical system. And since then, basically increased the number of languages on a regular basis. So now we have 41 different languages, which you can translate from any of those languages to any other language. So it's 1,640 language pairs that you can translate there. So you can just go there and go to a Greek website and translate it into Finnish. And so I think overall, a few years ago, I wouldn't have thought that this is possible, that we can do that now so quickly. So I would have thought, actually, it will take us longer to be able to do that, that those statistical systems probably only would work for the very big languages where we have gazillions of words like French English or Portuguese English. But it turned out to be that we can now build and are building and have built machine translation systems for very small languages where before that just didn't exist a machine translation system. And so we have now basically available for almost all official European Union languages. I think the only one that's missing is Irish, and we are working on it. And we also have very unusual languages for MT, so Thai, Vietnamese, Filipino. We had a hard time to find a Thai machine translation system before we made ours available. And we are working on even smaller languages now, so I'll talk a little bit about Yiddish in a minute. So I think what made this possible is the availability of parallel text and those general quality improvements. Because we made our algorithms better and better, we can now learn more from small amounts of data and build pretty good systems with small amounts of training data. And another big one is now, and I think it's actually a pretty important one, is that the uniform architecture. In this statistical framework, you have a uniform architecture which basically works for all languages. If we want to build a new machine translation system for a new language, it's exactly the same system as before, it's just the training data changes. And then comes the time to basically perform error analysis and see if then that specific language pair requires some specifics. But for over 90% of the system, it's all uniform across all those different languages. And then anything that gets implemented for a specific one, something like if you work, improve the Yiddish system, that typically then translates into improvements for other languages which have the same property, the same linguistic properties. So here, so Yiddish is not launched yet, but we have a research prototype for it. And it would be the prototypical example for a language where you wouldn't expect machine translation, statistical machine translation to work, right? It's there's a very small number of speakers. It's one of those endangered languages. And very little modern text is written in Yiddish. And so what we found is about 200,000 words of Perl text on the web that can be used then to train a statistical machine translation system. But is it possible to build a decent one? And so the answer is here. So with a lot of, so with that amount, small amount of training data, you don't get very far. So the blue score here is about 6%. But then with various other things that you could add into a statistical system, and especially here for Yiddish, what turned out to be especially important is to bridge, to basically use German English training data, Hebrew English training data, and Polish English training data, because Yiddish is a language which took a lot of the vocabulary from those three languages. You can get significant improvements. And there's actually a lot of languages where we have a similar phenomenon. So I'm pretty sure that those improvements which we got here will translate similarly to improve, for example, our Belarusian machine translation system or our Ukrainian machine translation system, because they have this relationship to Russian. So overall, the system now has almost a 20% blue score. And it's one of those languages, really, where you would have thought a few years ago, statistical MT will never be able to do that. Okay, so the other area is machine translation everywhere. So what Google offers is, many of you might have seen that, is basically text translation. You go to translator.google.com, you can paste in some text in any of those 41 languages and translate it into any other of those 41 languages. So the other area is web page translation. If you are at a web page, if you come up with a web page which you don't understand, you can just go to Google Translate, paste in the URL, and translate it into your own language or in as part of Google Search. If you find a web page which is not in your language, you can just translate it into your language. So those were the typical things what Google was doing in machine translation, text and web page translation. And so here is for the web search integration. If basically you type in a query here in, I think, Japanese, and then you find an English page, then there's basically a link on the side which tells the Japanese user if he wants to translate that into Japanese. And then if you click on that link, you go to that page in Japanese. So the text and web page translation works if you are at a page which is in a different language and you want to translate. But what if you don't are yet at that page? You want to find something and you want to see the answer to a question. What you do then is basically to do search. And so what we also offer is this cross-language search where you type in a query, here digital SLR camera, and you can type that query in English and search a Japanese web for it. If you're interested to buy one of those cameras, I want to figure out what's the most recent developments in that. And then basically you get to a page which shows you the search results. On the right-hand side, you see the original Japanese search results, which are coming from the translated query, which you see on top here. And on the left-hand side, you see the translation of that search results into English. So the title and the snippet is translated into English. And then if you click through here to those English translations, the corresponding Japanese page gets translated into English again, and everything basically looks like as if it were written in English. And it all happens at that time when you do the search. So another one of those cross-language search integrations for YouTube, where if you search for George Bush in your language, and this might be, I guess, Chinese, and there might not be as many videos in Chinese than in English. So what then is happening is basically that query gets translated into English, search is happening on the English side, and if it seems interesting, then those search results are just inserted here, and a user can click on those search results and see the video then in English. And correspondingly then the for some videos we have subtitles. So where then you can just also look at the subtitles or then translate the subtitles on the fly. So you would see here, for example, Obama speeches, his weekly speeches on YouTube. You can watch them on YouTube, and you can see the subtitles. And you can also right away say, I want to see that subtitle in Arabic, and then it would get a subtitle, and the whole video is then in Arabic. Another one is for feeds, where if you are reading blogs and you might want to read a blog in a different language, basically you can get a feed of that blog and just translate that into English, and the whole it's integrated into the normal feed process. And so we're working on more of those types of integrations. And basically what the idea is here is that machine translation, ideally you wouldn't even notice that it's there, that you're just doing something and you want to solve a problem. And if solving that problem involves machine translation, then so be it. But it's not that you have that you should be aware of having doing something special, paste out the text, go to translator.google.com, but it should be wherever there is a need for it. So some final thoughts in general. So overall, I guess we have made a huge amount of progress in machine translation in the field in general, and but there are even more opportunities ahead, I believe. So one is I believe the improvement curve right now of machine translation is very steep, and I believe we can really get to significantly better quality if we just extrapolate from current progress. So, for example, all the languages which we are offering right now, all the 41 languages, I believe in the not-too-distant future, they will be as good as the Italian-English translation there. Machine translation for many more languages. Can we get machine translation for 100 languages, 10,000 language pairs? It doesn't seem to be impossible anymore, looking at the Yiddish system as an example here. Machine translation for all input modalities, right? So this is always text, but speech, pictures. Would be very nice here in Prague if I could walk around with my Android phone and take a picture of some menu item which I don't understand, and then it would just translate it to me. Wouldn't that be great? And then also machine translation everywhere, so desktop, and within the applications, on your mobile phone. And within the research community, I think the great development since we have now statistical machine translation is everyone can do MT research and can do quite sophisticated, fancy one, can build systems which are state of the art by just going to LDC, getting the training data, training a system, and using MOSES and GZ++ and all the open source tools. You can build a system which is pretty good, and you can make state-of-the-art research on that, which wasn't possible in the old days where there were very complicated big systems which were only accessible by the companies that built those. But now, with a statistical approach and the open source behind it, you can build amazing systems just on the side. So what Google is doing there is contributing with data. So for example, here the Google N-grams, where we provide 5 grams on a trillion word corpus, which a lot of people are using in order to build language models. Another thing that we are doing is to provide the Google Language API, which allows basically integration of MT into web applications by anyone. So if you are having a blog or if you have some web application and MT would be a useful part of that, you can just use that API. There are 2 function calls. You can detect the language and translate the language from one language to another. And it's very easy, and everyone can do that, and it's free. So here is basically there's a web page for it. And so here you see the one potential use scenario is here for Picasa, which is this image website. And then a lot of people are writing comments, and then basically it's very easy to integrate with that API something which would just translate those comments on demand into other languages. The other thing is machine translation and natural language processing. So when you heard earlier talks from me on that, I always was very, very skeptical if natural language processing basically how much of it can contribute to improved machine translation, because if you looked at the recent how statistical machine translation systems are built, very often those are purely statistically very simple n-gram methods. There's very rarely there is a use of a parser or a part of speech checker or all the other classical natural language processing tools. And was kind of an interesting fact that a lot of those tools are basically built with the idea in mind that they should be useful for an application like machine translation. But in practice, it didn't turn out to work that well. But I think we are seeing progress there. So also in Google Translate, we use for some time a parser in our SOV languages, which translate when we translate from English into one of those languages like Hindi, Japanese, or Korean, and with significant improvements there. And so I guess there are ways to make this integration also work. The current research challenges, I guess, here is my list of the five major research challenges I find the most interesting one and the ones where most improvements should come in the near-term future. So one is long-distance reordering. Languages like German, the translation quality is unfortunately not as good because it requires a lot of reordering if you go to a different language. Exploiting larger scale context, so to go beyond a sentence. There's a lot of problems that you see, especially for the good languages, with pronouns being translated wrongly and so on. Another one is morphology, not so much if you translate a morphologically rich language, but if you want to translate into a morphologically rich language. So if you go from English into Czech, then this is very challenging. Another one is, and that one is, I think, doesn't get enough attention in general, is user feedback or interactive machine translation, to really integrate machine translation into a process and to learn as part of that integration that the machine translation system improves quality as part of that integration, learning from the user while the system is going. And we have some parts of that, so we allow basically users to suggest a better translation, but I think much more can be done there. And the other big one, I believe, is confidence measures or reliability. The biggest problem that we have with Google Translate is not so much that sometimes the translation is a little bit funny or is ungrammatical, but the biggest problems are sometimes very annoyingly wrong translations. And that's part of the statistical approach, where if something gets misaligned, then it can sometimes be something completely different. And those kind of embarrassing translations are one of the biggest problems. So if you could increase the reliability of the translation, that there would be certain types of mistakes would be drastically reduced. That is one of the biggest improvements. Okay, summary and conclusions. So I think we see much better quality, and we'll continue to see much better quality. We'll also continue to see many more languages going beyond 40. And machine translation everywhere. So the vision there is to really break down the language barrier, that your language is not limiting the amount of information that you can get access to. Thank you. I'm not sure if you have time for questions.
Yes.
Or
surprisingly, we do have. This should be a hint to the speakers to come. If you don't want to be asked questions, stretch your time until the very last moment. But in this case, you didn't do it, so people can ask you some questions. Bob.
Given that example of translating closed captions on the video, is Google also extracting the original closed captions, or is that embedded in the video?
So that's embedded in the video. So this works at this point only if basically the video comes with closed captions, which a relatively small percentage is doing. Well, I guess, there are some standard approaches there, right? So hierarchical or syntax-based methods were then claim to solve that problem or claim to address that problem to some extent. And But so far, the improvements there are relatively moderate. So what we are doing for this English to Hindi or English to Japanese system is actually to do this. It's another standard approach to basically analyze the source side of the sentence more and to translate the source language into a language which is more similar to the target language. So if you go from English to Hindi, we would parse the source sentence and then perform those types of reorderings which make it look like Hindi. So English prime, which is then Hindified, so the verb would just get moved to the end and things like that. And with that, then, for those languages, we were able to get quite nice improvements. But I guess overall, it's not clear which approach will then work in the end. So I guess the two different approaches would be to do more detailed analysis of the source side and then do reorderings there or adaptations, or to do the same thing on the target side and to just make sure that then, the sentence in the target language is well-formed and well-structured. And we'll have to see. Well, I guess so. That's, I could imagine there will be another research topic, which is text classification, which classifies text to look to be machine translated or human translated or humanly written text. And I guess whatever works there well might be interesting to use for machine translation evaluation research. Right. And the better our machine translations become, the harder it's going to be for you too. That's true. So, I guess for our Hindi ones, we would be able to find those. But for our Italian ones, it could be tough. I don't have that number offhand, and. So it's, I don't know right now. But I guess I showed it must have been more, was Italian English in that list?
Numbers for several couples, but not for English, not for Italian.
Okay, Italian English is not in there. If so, it would be then, I could imagine it's similar like those other languages here in the quantity of text used, so over a billion words probably. No. So this one is just a research prototype here for the Yiddish system. So the Yiddish system, hopefully sooner than later will be made. And no, so that was built for the Yiddish system. That was built for that one. I heard that actually frequently, that machine translation companies tell me that they are very happy that Google is doing that and making everything free and raising the awareness of machine translation in general, and that it helps them, and that they are taken more serious. And I guess we are operating there in a different space, right? We provide that service to end users for free. And I could imagine actually a lot of those users which you're referring to, they could use Google Translate, right? We have the API and they could integrate it there. One challenge I think there is that it's just so easy and simple to integrate. A lot of the big institutions find it's too, right? You can't just do it. There's no contract to be written, nothing to be signed, no complicated process to go through. Just implement it, and then it's there, right? And a summer intern can do that integration into a bigger workflow, and it's just too easy. And therefore, I guess a lot of those customers, they want other processes in order to get that and directly people to talk to.
Once again.
Thank you.